We're going to start here now with the story of Lot and his daughters. Okay, so they're already past the destruction of Sodom. They're past the destruction of Sodom, and they are in a cave somewhere. It seems Lot's wife is gone. It's fascinating that there doesn't seem to be any love lost in the verse. She disappears, and they don't even seem to wonder what happened to her. It's kind of accepted that she's just gone. So, Pasuk Lamed, Vayal Lot Mitzoar, Vayesha Baharu Shdevin Asavi Mo, Kiare Lashavas Mitzoar. He's on a mountain, Vayesha Be'am Yarel, Hu Shdevin Asavi. So, from the mountain, he's now in a cave. Vatom Rabbi Chira El Tzira. So, on page 90 in the Chumash. Vatom Rabbi Chira El Tzira. The older one says to the younger, Avinu Zakein, our father's an old guy. Ve'ishain Baritz Lavo Aleinu. There's no man who can come upon us. Kederach halaretz, so there's no way to have any children. L'cha nashkeh savinu yayin. Let's give him wine. Nishkevaymo nichayemi avinu zara. We'll have a child from him. And there are plenty of interpretations as to what their plan was. You know, they were assuming that one would have a boy, one would have a girl, and therefore they'd be able to match them up. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. They had two boys, but they also there's a lot of criticism that we can put towards them. One of them, I remember reading a couple years ago, that they didn't wait for instruction from God. Okay, in other words, if they thought that the world had been destroyed, well, there was a time when Adam was the only person on earth with his wife, and he was told, get out of the garden, and pru revu. Noah gets out of the ark, and he's told, get out of the ark, pru revu. So they should be given instruction and they should wait. And they didn't wait. So that's one of the main critiques. Okay, so now the question is here, are they both equally to blame? They're both equally to blame in terms of the story. Because after doing her thing with her father, the older one says in Pasuk Lamed Daled, the older one says to the younger one, Hein shechavti emesh esavi, I lay with our father yesterday, or my father. So we'll give him a little more wine. Now you will with him. We'll have children from him. And then the younger one got up and lay with him. He didn't know about it when she got up. Now, is there a difference between the way that their coming to their father is presented? So look and compare Lamed Gimel to Lamed Hay. So this is where, if you look at English, you might not get it. You have to look at the Hebrew. The English does have a distinction as well, but it's a little more damning in the Hebrew. So look in Lamed Gimel. They gave him wine. She came and lay with her father. Okay, one is vatavo, and one is vatakam. What's the difference? Take a look at Ksav HaKabbalah, Lamed Hay. The older one, who she really had to entice her sister to do this, okay? She has no shame whatsoever. She doesn't hide her face, she doesn't hide anything. She had no moral compunctions, nothing stopped her, didn't care. L'chein amarba.
Should she have? Meaning, this is in a different time, a different place, and perhaps most importantly, a very different culture when the norms were.
Okay, well, there should at least be a little bit of hesitation and trepidation.
By our standards,
hey,
yes.
What does she name the kid?
Moav.
What does Moav mean? From daddy. Okay? What does the second one mean? Amon. What is Amon?
It's the song,
from my mage, from my nation.
Daddy.
What?
It's the song, but my heart belongs to daddy.
Okay. But that's what he says. He says, "Lachena marba v'atavo v'atishkav." She came, left. No hesitation. Avalatzira, but the younger one, Shayaliba nogva milahodia gnus maaseh. She at least had a little bit of shame, a little bit embarrassed. V'gam begufa maisa esalaksas miniyam alasa. She didn't want to do it. Achrei shekvar hirgish avia mimasa abechira balayla rishona. Because they kind of knew that he knew. You think that he was drunk, he didn't realize what had happened. Like, you wake up, you're like, you know, something's weird going on here. My daughter is acting strange. You know, I kind of have a vague memory of something. Just because he was drunk.
I think that's speculative.
Okay, you can think of...
The way it's written in the Torah, the Shikha Ukuma, isn't there some different presentation that they interpret to mean that he didn't know it when... She lay down with him, but he did know it when.
Yes. A bunch of commentaries go in that route, and it may even be a midrash that says that. Yes, he didn't know when she lay down, but he did know when she got up. Yeah.
And to reinforce what you said, before the younger one actually lies with the father, the older one talks her again into it.
Right.
Okay, we don't have that story.
Right.
I mean, it's not just that the older one did it and the first discussion worked for both of them.
No, right. She has to repeat. She says, "Hein shachafti emesh, I did it. Now it's your turn. Go ahead. She really needed to come to grips with it. L'chein amar ba batokal vatishkav. That she got up, she's like, all right, I'll do it. I'll go. If you need to be inspired to do it, it says kima. You have to be pushing against your nature in order to do this, and that's what she was doing. So essentially, he's making the point that there are two very different attitudes here, indicated just by a word, vatavo and vatakam. And the Chumash makes that distinction. Look at the next comment. He says,
"I'm sorry, I don't understand the distinction."
Vatavo is bold, wanting it,
okay.
And vatakam is.
So
then, how come the Torah doesn't use the same language?
But you said there's a distinction. Yes. Words.
So that's the point, and the two different words indicate two different attitudes.
Right, and I'm suggesting that the younger one. Was hesitant, not necessarily because it was her father, not necessarily, but because, you know, she's never done it before, she's a young girl. Even if it were her, another male, she might have been hesitant because she was modest or bashful or
okay,
it's a new thing.
Except, it could be, I'm not going to argue, I'm not going to disagree with you, except, but I will argue, that says... that her sister tells her, hey, shechafti emesh esavi, I slept with my father. No, you know, you sleep with your father. Okay? In other words, like, just take away from the fact that he was with somebody else last night. It's daddy, and, you know, end of story.
Yeah, right.
They clearly had a different mindset about it. Look at the next commentary of the Ksava Kabbalah. He says, V'lo yada. And by the way, and this is really what you were saying, Gershon. He's agreeing with you. Aval gav de ben noach mutar bito. A Noahide is allowed to sleep with his daughter.
Huh?
The daughter is not included in the arayos which are prohibited to Ben Noach. And he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin to prove it. But nonetheless, they had, you know, it may not be prohibited, but we don't do that kind of thing. Okay? And so, there should have been a natural hesitation to say, you know what, I'm not really sure this is the right thing to do. And the older one didn't have it, and the younger one did have it, even though she obviously went ahead and did it anyway. All right. The next thing that I want to do is a little bit in the Abraham Sarah Avimelech story. Okay? We're going to look now in Pasuk Yud, towards the end of it. So the story goes that Abraham and Sarah have to move into Gerar because of the circumstances that make them go there. There's a Is there a famine? No, there isn't a famine. There's a famine in Yitzchak's time. That's why they need to go there. There isn't a famine. Here it just says, Vayisam Yisham Avram Artsan Ega Vayisha Ben Kadesh Ben Shur Vayogar Ben Gruar. He lived in Gruar. The famine sent them to Egypt. That was in last week's parasha. But there's no famine here. They moved to Gruar, and they tell everybody that they're brother and sister. We actually saw his interpretation last week about that, how they do that. Why do they do that? They do that because they actually were brother and sister, and the in a familial sense. Everybody says that Sarah was Yiska. Yiska was a sister of Lot. Avram and Lot are described as brothers. So if Avram and Lot are brothers, Avram and Sarah are brothers, and brother and sister rather. And so, but the reason why they needed to make this lie is because not a lie, but they needed to make this front is they essentially needed to say that because Sarah is going to be taken, that's the rule. The question is Avram going to survive? In Egypt, she's going to be taken. In Gerar, she's going to be taken. The question is Avram going to survive? So they needed to use that explanation of who they are in order to make it that Avram would not be killed. And we saw last week that Avram viewed his marriage to Sarah on a Noahide level. On a Noahide level, meaning that when are you married? When you're together. When are you not married? When you're not together. Okay, so if Avram and Sarah say, look, we're brother and sister and that's how we're living, then for her to be taken, it's not an adulterous problem on a Noahide level, because the Noahide levels of marriage are very different than other levels of marriage. So anyway, Avram explains to Avimelech after Avimelech and his nation are punished, and so in Pasuk Yud Aleph, bottom page 92, Avram says, "I said there's no God fearing over here. They're going to kill me if she's my wife." And it happens to be, Achosi Basavi, Achlo Basimi. She is my sister on my father's side, but not on my mother's side. Matili Lisha, and she has become my wife. Or she did become my wife. Maybe she isn't right now, but whatever. Which is, again, that's his commentary from last week, that we saw last week. Vayihi, Kasher Hituosi Elohim Ibesavi. So when Elohim caused me to leave my house, Va'omar La, and I said to her, Zechas Decha Shetasim, this is the kindness you can do for me. Every place we're going to go, I'd like you to say that I am your brother. So that is the arrangement that we have. Okay? So Ksav HaKabbalah, again, the focus of tonight was, as I said in the earlier class, the focus of tonight was that the Ksav HaKabbalah focuses on a word and gives you an interpretation that you haven't heard before. Okay, because he goes against the mold in terms of the way words are presented. So take a look, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Hit Uoc. Where is it in your booklet?
Page five.
Bottom. Okay. So before we look at what he says, Kasher Hit Uoc Elohim Ibeis Avi. When Elohim sent me out of my father's house, what do you think that means? Who's Elohim who sent me out of my father's house? Who sent Avram out of his father's house? Who said to Avram, Lech lecha me'aretzcha mi'moladetcha beis avicha?
Father.
What?
His father.
No, who said Lech lecha me'aretzcha? God. Okay, but what's the beginning of that pasuk? Vayomer Hashem el Avram, Yudke Vavke, sent him. Okay? So, was it really God? Hit'u. It's plural. Hit'u osi Elohim ibeis avi. Who are the Elohim that sent me out of my father's house? Take a look. Ha elilim sheba beis avi heim garmuli la'azov eseres mulati. The gods that were in my father's house. What's our tradition about Terach? That he was an idolater, he sold idols, whatever it was, but that they were idolaters. They are the ones who forced me out of my father's house. La'azov eseres mulati. Valios toeh, and to be a wanderer, a toeh, somebody who was just trying to find his way in a different land. Valisami makon lemakon lefarsem ba'olam bitul amunah kozeves, and that made me travel from place to place to publicize in the world my nullification of that strange form of belief. Kachal lufin agina satam shevsik Elohim imilaso si shuberavia. Now we saw this a lot last week as well. Look at the truck. Vayihi kasher hit'u osi. There's a pause. There's a ravi. A ravi kash I'll lean at you. Vayihi kasher kitu osi. Okay? So that's the pause. That they made me wonder. Who made me wonder? Elohim mibeis avi. The Zarka and the Segol are connected. Elohim mibeis avi. Who sent me away? The Elohim from the house of my father. That's how he proves it. Because the Mesorah, the trup, the cantillation marks, that is the traditional form of punctuating the sentence. So when he puts together, when the trup puts these phrases together, he's saying that's how we know that what Avram is referring to. Atam mechaber Elohim l'mash acharav. Elohim is connected to me beis avi, to the gods from the house of my father. Well, if he's ain't no shem kodesh. So Elohim here is not referring to God as we know him. V'chein, I'm not sure what Liba means. Who shem chol? It's a mundane Elohim.
You're saying I'm confused.
Yes.
Is this saying that the gods that Avraham smashed, the ones that he rejected,
he's not. He might not be referring to specific physical idols,
okay,
but he's referring to the view of a polytheistic view point that existed in his father's house. It's that faith system which chased me out. I couldn't take it anymore.
Oh, chased him?
That's what he's saying.
All right.
Hit-u means, basically, it means it made me a wanderer.
All right, you just suggested something I had never thought of. The idea of him being chased out as opposed to, hey, you know what? Go out of your father's house. It's time for you to be a man. You've got to follow your path in life and do what you're supposed to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As opposed to, get the hell out of here.
Well, okay, so there's a lot of depth to what you're saying, and there's a lot of depth to the viewpoints surrounding Avraham's leaving.
I'm sure
that Avraham, for example, is given two shlichus. One is the one that God gives him, that you have to become your own man, you got to make this monotheism thing real. And the other one is that he's following his father's, I'll call it Zionistic purposes, to head towards the land of Canaan. Terach, one of my rabbis liked to joke that Terach was the first Zionist. He wanted to go to Canaan. He started going to Canaan, and he stopped in Haran because it was nice there. But Avram finishes the job. Why? Because that's where his father wanted to be. Okay, it's fascinating. It's a longer thing as well. Obviously, I can't just get bogged down in that. That's the theme of the evening. But the point being that Avraham, on the one hand, is driven by a desire for God. On the other hand, I mean, how it's a countercultural kind of idea, meaning not it's not countercultural, but in the realm of being countercultural, it is. I can't take it where my family is. My family's at such a different place. I'm at a different place. I can't be here anymore. I've got to leave.
You're suggesting two different things that I think blend.
Yes, but that's the point. They blend.
He was, of his own beliefs, he was drawn out. But there were other forces that were saying, beat it.
Yes. Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hashem, Vayomer Hashem El Avram, is telling him, beat it. And why beat it? Because you're already halfway there. You're already out of your house. Look, we saw last week that the interpretation of leave, the Ktzav HaKabbalah's interpretation of leave me'artzecha u'mimolatetecha u'mibeis avicha is not about a geographical place. It's about a mindset. You can be, right, what's the line? You could take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the boy, right? Or fill in the blank, whatever the place is. So when Hashem says to Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimolatetecha u'mibeis avicha, he's saying, get Brooklyn out of your head. Or in his case, Ur-Kasdim. Or in his case, your father's household and anything that connects you to it. Because you're just in a different place. Wait until next week when we get into Avram giving instruction about getting Rivka. Okay? And why he sent his servant to go there. when everything about that place was abhorrent, just as abhorrent as Canaan. Fascinating stuff. Okay, so that's that. All right, I'm going to do one more. If you have to go, you know, don't feel free to. I mean, feel free to go. Don't feel that you're stuck here. Okay,
beat it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Actually, I'm going to do two. I'm going to do one short one because I just found this to be interesting, and then a little bit on the Akedah, and then we'll call it a day. Okay. So take a look now at Pasuk Perakav Aleph Pasuk Tezvav. Okay, this is in the story of Avram, after whatever's going on with Yishmael and Yitzchak, which is subject of a lot of interpretation as well. Avraham is forced to send Hagar and Yishmael out of the household, and he gives them bread and water. Pasuk Yudal, page 96, Pasuk Yudal. Vayashkem Avram baboker vayikach lechem vechem asmayim vayitein el Hagar. Avram gets up in the morning, he brings bread and water, he gives it to Hagar. Samal shechma, he puts it on her shechem. A shechem is a shoulder. We saw that word in Parshas Noach, when Shem and Yefes take a blanket to cover their father, and they put it on shechem shnehem.
So she's carrying a full-sized, almost man.
Hold on. That's the question. But no, he puts the bread and water on her shoulder. Ve'es ha'yelid. Oh, so is she carrying him? That's the question. Now he keeps on being referred to as a yelid. How old is Yitzchak at this time? Yitzchak. I'm talking about how old is Avram and Sarah's child? He's the reason why they get kicked out, because of whatever Yishmael is doing to Yitzchak, right? What did the Torah say about this?
By the Akedah, he's 37 years old.
That's not clear. Okay.
Regression as to what this party was.
Correct. Oh, okay, good. So you're familiar. What are the possibilities? A weaning party. Actually, let's start at the very beginning. One is that it's a bris. He gamel hey gimel eight mal. Okay, that's one interpretation. That's a bris. Another one is a weaning party, which would be how old?
Well, the weaning would be 3 years.
Two or three, okay. What's another one?
13.
Bar mitzvah. It's a bar mitzvah party, okay. So, how what's the difference in age between Yishmael and Yitzchak? Yishmael was circumcised when he was 13, and Yitzchak was born a year later. So, they're 14 years apart. So, if it's Yitzchak's bris, Yishmael's a kid, 14, maybe he hasn't hit puberty yet, he's 14 years old. If it's a weaning party, Yishmael is 16, 17, right? If it's a bar mitzvah, how old is Yishmael?
13.
No, if Yitzchak's bar mitzvah, so then Yishmael is 27.
14 years old.
Okay, 27. That's the case. This is not a child we're talking about. Okay, we're talking about a man. Take a look. In biyom, so Pasuk Tesvav, you got me? What page is it?
Six.
Six near the bottom, okay? Second to last thing on the bottom, page 6. And biyom yigamel Yitzchak hu kipshuta uchadash rabbanan biyom shenigamal mechalav haya Yishmael az kben tesvav shanim. So if it means an actual weaning, then Yishmael is 15. Ularavachad yom yigamel biyom shenigamal beyetzer hara vayinu b'shnas yigamel Yitzchak. But if it's the time when he's weaned from the yetzer hara, which means it's Yitzchak's bar mitzvah, im kein ha Yishmael az ben chav zayin shana. So Yishmael is 27. The Mikro Yelit. So why is the pasuk keep on calling him a boy? A Yelit. Because of his weakness, he becomes like a child. He can't move his bones to walk on his own. He needs to be carried. Now, what does it mean he's carried? Is she like, you know, the way I take my kid and throw him over my shoulder? I mean, it must mean that she's schlepping him. She's dragging him, and it's very uncomfortable for both of them. Onam matzanu shem yelid gam leben arba'im. He says, but we have another place where a yelid is referring to a 40-year-old person. Shenemar ba'yu asa say yeladim asher gamaluto. Rechavam emalko ha'yibem mem aleph shanim kemvuar. And Rechavam, when he became the king, Rechavam, that was the son of Shlomo Melech. When he became the king, he was 41 years old, and he's referred to as as Yeladim. So he says that the word Yelad, it's not specific, doesn't necessarily mean a child. Just as we know the word Na'ar doesn't necessarily mean a child, because some people who are much older than a Na'ar of age 13 is sometimes referred to as a Na'ar. Binyamin, in the end of the book of Bereishis, is referred to as a Na'ar when he's at least 30 years old and has 10 children, but he's referred to as a Na'ar over and over again, and sometimes as a Yelad. So it's not specific, but obviously the idea of carrying Ishmael is something which is troubling. Okay, I'm not going to do this inside. Just want to share with you a couple of things that he says about Avraham in the context of the Akedah. Number one, we're told that Elohim Nisa'as Avraham. And at the Akedah, God Nisa. What does Nisa mean? This is another example of having another interpretation of a fancy word. Most people, when they look at the word Nisa, they say that God... What does Nisa mean? God... Well, how does Archibald translate it? Our school translator says that happened after these things, page 101, God tested Abraham, Nisa, like from the word Nisayon, means he tested it. And that is one of the classic interpretations. Actually, if you look on page 100 of the Arskel Chumash, you see that he has two lists of the 10 trials that Avram had. When they both include in there the sacrificing of the binding of Yitzchak. So it's a test. Is it a test? So last year in the class, in the Parsha class with the Kli Yakar, where he says, he said, based on the grammar of the word Nisa, it means, this is not a test. God had already tested. That's what Nisa means. God had already tested Avraham. It was proven. This is just a confirmation of some kind. But he says, no. He says that the word Nisa doesn't mean test. It comes from the word like a nes. Not a nes like a miracle, but a nace like a banner. You know, the copper snake is referred to as a nace. Not a nace because it's miraculous, because it's held up on a pole. So it's a banner. That what is the point of the Akedah? It's meant to make Avraham into a banner for all time. Avraham is going to be placed on a pedestal here and shown as God's example of what it means to listen to God's instruction. And he brings a number of examples of how there are words, shorishes, root words that have multiple meanings and multiple interpretations, and how that is the case over here. So that's the first point that I wanted to make. Just that the word Nisa refers to raising Avraham up, and the last one is the one about v'nishtachaveh v'nashuv alechem. Okay, so Avraham, when they get to the mountain, he says to the Avram who's going there, thinking that he's going to be sacrificing Yitzchak, while on the other hand, holding a hope of some kind that it might not happen. Okay, but that clearly is his intention, because he binds Yitzchak, he puts him on the Mizbeach, and he is about to slaughter him before the angel tells him to stop. So Pasuk Hey, page 102, Vayomer Avraham el ne'arav, shu lechem po machamor v'ani v'anayin el chad ko. Avram says to the lads, you guys stay here with the donkey, I and this lad are going to go up, and we will bow and we will return to you. Okay, so the question is, we will return to you. Is Avram lying? So I don't remember what Rashi says. I think Rashi is the one who says that I might come back with his bones. Does he even mention it? Vinashuva. No, Rashi says that Nisnave, that he prophesied that they were going to return. There's another interpretation that said that Avram was saying that we will return to you, though the boy will be dead and I'll be bringing his body. But the question is, was Avram lying? So after building the case to say that Avram, why he believes that Avram was not lying, he explains to us v'chalila. So do you have it there? It's halfway down, three words from the end of the paragraph on page 7. V'chalila. Okay? Do you find it? Page 7? It's about 10, 11, 12 lines from the bottom. 10 lines from the bottom, rather. Three words from the end of the line. V'chalila levino rishon. V'lokei v'resh ha-shaker sh'nemar aleh to'avas Hashem sif'sei shaker. He says, there's no way that our forefather was lying. As the verse in Mishlei says, that it's an abomination to God to lie. Imkein ein safek sh'v'libo lo'yem iskavein rak l'ma'amar t'nai. So part of his interpretation is that what Avram was saying was a condition. So what does that mean? If nishtachaveh, then nashuv alichem. Okay, I skipped that part, but he says at the beginning that there are two ways that Avram had in mind. And that's essentially the answer that he's trying to give here. That if nishtachaveh, v'nashuv alichem. Ani ranar nelchad ko, that's one thing that may happen. And if nishtachaveh, v'nashuv alichem. If we bow, in other words, if I don't slaughter him, then we will return. D'cheshelo, im ken yitzav shebelibo, lo hayo miskaveh raglam amar tonight. That he was making a condition. That if all they do there is just a binding, but not the full deed, then he will not be returning alone, and there's no lie. Avram didn't want to tell him what he was actually intending to do. Because maybe they would, on their own human will to stop him, they would say, hey, you can't do this. This is a horrible thing. Or maybe they would want to watch and they would get in his way and they would somehow mess things up. And so therefore Abraham spoke to them using the other method as well. Okay, in other words, the way that he presents it, he says that there are two possible ways of explaining kavanos, intentions. So one is, I'm just looking at the second line at the beginning, which I skipped, but I should have started with this. One is that he's telling them straight. What we're going to be doing there is we're going to bow, and then we're going to return. But the other one is, that he's making some kind of condition. That if we bow, then we will return. In other words, Avram is leaving what he's telling them vague enough that he could, on the one hand, be going ahead and slaughtering Yitzchak. On the other hand, he could be going and he could be returning to Yitzchak, with Yitzchak. So that this would convince the young men to stay in their place, ad shuvo alehem, until he returns to them. So nothing's going to stop him from doing the mitzvah. Lashon Rashi kavanashuv v'nesnave sheyesh bo shneihem kavanaso nivei v'lo yada manivei. He says that Rashi says that he prophesied, but he didn't know what he was prophesying, or he didn't understand where that idea came from, but nonetheless, he somehow said what it was. Lashon Talmud bris kruso l'sfasayim. The Talmud talks about a covenant which comes out of lips. V'stai milsa da hadur tarvayu. Sometimes a person, what comes out of their mouth is the opposite of what they intend to do, and that is just, it's the way some people sometimes speak. And so in essence, what he's trying to explain here is that what Avram is doing is he's not lying, because Avram is giving a vague enough explanation of what he's going to do. And by the way, this is also a way of understanding what God's instruction to Abraham is. If you go back to the very beginning of the section, when God says to Abraham, Pasuk Beis, 100, go to the land of Moriah, the Ha'alehu Sham Le'olah Alachare Arim Asher Amar Elecha, that you have to raise him up Le'olah, that also is open to different interpretations. That Abraham could understand it to mean that you're going to raise your child up as an offering, or it could mean you're going to raise them up the mountain, le'olah alachare arim, to see the olah that's going to be taking place on the top of the mountain, because that's in fact what happens. So in other words, God leaves it vague enough that Avram thinks that he's doing what God says, but then when God seems to change it, saying don't touch the child, Avram is able to nonetheless fulfill what God said. So God isn't viewed as a liar. Avram isn't viewed as misunderstanding, because it's purposely designed in a way that it can be interpreted in different ways. So it makes Abraham's test, if you will, into something a little more extraordinary. It also makes it that Abraham is not lying, and it also makes it that God's not lying, and that somehow it all works out in the way that this can become a lesson for all time. The Akedah is a very difficult story. Millions upon millions of words have been written about the Akedah, trying to understand. There's a significant reason, of course, why it spread on Rosh Hashanah, why it's one of the main things that we focus on in the Slichos as well, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. because there's a whole lot to be taken from Avram's connection to God, Yitzchak's connection to God, and what takes place in this story. But one of the themes that we saw actually in the first class tonight was that great people have to go to great lengths to make sure that they can't be perceived as liars, and that the things which they say and the things which they do should be above scrutiny. And so in this way, the way that he's presenting it, Avraham achieves that goal. Avraham is above scrutiny because he's not lying, he's not misunderstanding God, God isn't lying, and somehow it all works out, I thank God for good, in terms of Yitzchak's experience, in terms of Avraham's experience, and this is one of the things which he focuses on in explaining how Avraham's words of V'nishtachavev v'nashuv aleichem have different understandings, and therefore it's something which turned out to be true in every sense. Okay, we're going to stop here, and I thank you for indulging me, and vice versa. Okay.